I'd like to begin the sermon today by just jumping right into a passage of Scripture. If you'll turn with me back to John chapter 14. We're going to let John 14 and the first few verses of it serve as the introduction to the message today. John 14, beginning in verse 1. This is in the midst of this section of Scripture occurring on the evening of the Passover, just prior to Christ being arrested and crucified. John chapter 14, he had just kept the Passover, instituted the Passover symbols with his disciples, the New Testament Passover symbols, washed their feet, and then he told them, "I'm not going to be here with you much longer." It's a confusing time for the disciples. They were trying to comprehend what they could. But he told them at the end of chapter 13, "Where I'm going, you cannot follow me, but afterward you shall follow me." And he had this exchange with Peter where Peter said, "What do you mean we can't follow you? I'll follow you wherever you go." And he tells Peter, "No, actually, you're going to deny me three times this very night." We pick it up in chapter 14 and verse 1 where Christ says, "Let not your heart be troubled." He knew that his disciples were a little bit troubled at the time. They were confused about the things that he had been saying. They were perhaps a bit unsettled, a bit anxious about what all this meant and what it was going to lead to. And he tells them, "Don't worry. Don't be stressed. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, you may be also." Now he tells them not to be troubled, and then he gives them a reason why they don't need to be troubled. Because although they'll be going through a very difficult time, he knew exactly what was going to happen to him. He knew he would have to give his life. He knew that with the exception of this period of 40 days after his resurrection, when he appeared to the disciples, after that, they weren't going to see him regularly. And yet he told them, "Let not your heart be troubled, because I go to prepare a place for you." This is all part of a plan. This is all for a purpose. And you're part of that plan. You're part of that purpose. I go to prepare your part in it. I go to prepare a place for you. We're familiar with verse 2. "In my Father's house are many mansions." Some translations say many dwellings. Maybe you've heard in the Church of God in the past this being referred to as many offices or many positions of service. And Christ says, "I go to prepare one of those places for you. I go to prepare individual places for you in my Father's house. I'm going to prepare a dwelling for you. Your part in my Father's plan is going to be prepared. We're going to give some special attention to it. Figure out where you fit best." But in this saying itself, "I go to prepare a place for you," also indicates the other side of that coin, which is that God the Father and Jesus Christ are also preparing us for a specific place. "I go to prepare a place for you," and in a sense, and we're going to be preparing you for that place. God the Father and Jesus Christ alone know what your place, your mansion, your office in God's house will one day be. But we have the encouragement that although we might not know what that specific position of service, that specific role in God's family will be, God the Father and Jesus Christ do. And they're going to make sure we're prepared for it. And we're told in general what the saints will be doing during the 1,000-year reign of Jesus Christ. That will be kings and priests reigning alongside him. But exactly what role each of us will play in that future period of time is a mystery to us. But it's not a mystery to God. He's going to make sure that we are each properly prepared for the task that He has in mind for us in His kingdom. That we're ready for the office, the position of service He has specifically in mind for each and every one of us. And brethren, I believe that the trials and the experiences of this life, especially the hard stuff we deal with, are part of our individual, personalized training plan that God is using us to prepare us for the specific role of service He has in mind for each of us in His kingdom. I believe God is using the basic principles of training in our preparation for the future. I want to talk about three basic principles of training today. We're kind of going to be crossing between the physical realm and the spiritual with this analogy. But often that helps us understand the way God works and the way He does things. So look at a physical example or a physical analogy and look at the correlations. So I'm going back to my former life here, to my physical education days when I was preparing to be a PE teacher. Some of the exercise science classes I took. But these are three basic principles that all of us can grasp, and I think we'll be able to see the connections between them. Connections between how someone might train physically for an event, for a goal they have in mind, and how I believe we'll see that God is training us spiritually using these same principles at work. Now, through the trials and experiences we have today, God is training us for the specific role, the specific office or mansion, if you will, that He has in mind. The challenges we face aren't going to waste. So let's dive in here to this first principle of training, the most fun of the three to say, and that is specificity. Specificity. I'll give you a brief definition or a paraphrase anyway, my definition of each of these principles. The principle of specificity basically means that training should be relevant and appropriate to the goal toward which someone's working. The training plan that you're on, the activities that you do as part of your training, should be specific to the goal. That's pretty logical, right? For example, if someone's working on a specific component of fitness that they want to improve in their lives, let's say they want to work on their endurance, their cardiorespiratory endurance, the ability of the body to keep the heart beating fast and the lungs working rapidly for a long stretch of time. Think long-distance running, swimming, etc. Anything that's using the big muscles in your body and makes your heart beat really fast. If you want to improve your cardiorespiratory endurance, going to a calm Pilates class or doing some yoga is not going to help because of the principle of specificity. The training activities have to be specific to, appropriate to, the goal that you're actually working toward. If you're trying to build your upper body strength, I don't care how many squats you do, but your biceps aren't going to get bigger. Right? The activity that's part of your training needs to be specific to the goal. If I want to work on my upper body strength, it doesn't matter how many leg presses I do or how many squats I do or how many lunges. It's not going to affect these muscles up here. That's the basic principle of specificity. It's so logical. Does God use it in His training of us? Let's go back to Isaiah 64 and read verse 8. Isaiah 64 and verse 8. We'll just read the one verse here. Verse 8 tells us, "But now, O Lord, You are our Father. We are the clay, and You are potter, and all we are the work of Your hand." A short verse, but a profound principle for us to keep in mind. This basic relationship between each of us and God is so easy to forget at times, especially the difficult times. Through the challenging times of suffering or of trials, persecution. It's easy to forget this simple relationship that God is the potter and we are the clay, that He's molding us into the shape that He wants us to be in, that He's forming us into the spiritual image and likeness that He has in mind. He uses the principle of specificity. And what that means, brethren, is that understanding this basic concept that God is specific in what He allows us to go through, that should give us encouragement to know that the sufferings of this life aren't wasted. They're specific to the goal God has in mind of forming and shaping us into the image of His Son, of forming us and preparing us and strengthening us in character for that very specific role that He might have in mind in His kingdom for you and for me. Some of the sufferings and the trials you go through that can cause us to be perplexed and say, why is God allowing this one? What if that actually relates directly to what your role of service will be in the millennium? What if the suffering, the trials that you're facing aren't just about something you've done in the past, but about what you're going to do in the future? Now, are there different things that we go through in our lives that are the consequences of our own choices? Absolutely. But is it possible that some of the things we have to go through now are not because of a poor choice we made, or because God's trying to punish us in some way, but that He's simply preparing us for the place He has in mind for us, just as Jesus Christ said, I go and prepare a place for you. That He's preparing us for that place too. That He's allowing us to be stretched, to be strengthened in a very specific way for a very specific role in the future. If that's the case, doesn't that change our perspective, even if just a little bit, on whatever it is we might be going through at this time in life, to realize that it has a specific purpose in God's plan, that no tear you cry, no sweat that you shed, no pain you experience is going to waste, but that He's using it to prepare you, that He's using it as the master potter to form you into what He wants you to be. I don't know about you, but that gives me encouragement through the difficult times, through the trials that we all face, to say, you know what? If God, as our perfect trainer, sees that this is part of His plan to get me in the shape He wants me to be in, then that can help encourage me to press on. Let's look at Psalm 33. Psalm 33, verse 13. Psalm 33, verse 13. I had high hopes for this blue curtain up here that it would block the heat from this wall, but not quite. I think I'm just conditioned to our 66 degrees at home and shivering all the time. So, Psalm 33, beginning in verse 13. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From the place of His dwelling, He looks on all the inhabitants of the earth. He fashions their hearts individually. He considers all their works. So we know God is aware of everything that's going on the earth, that each and every human being is a potential son or daughter in His future family. And it says that He looks on all the inhabitants of the earth and He fashions their hearts individually. He's that potter working the clay. And what does the potter do when He's working that clay, if maybe there's a nick in that piece of pottery, something that's not quite the right shape, so you just throw that pile of clay out, give up? No, He reforms it. He works it again. He might smash it down a little bit and start shaping again until it's the perfect shape that He wants it to be for the purpose, the goal that He has in mind. Now, if God fashions the hearts of men individually, as it says here, if that's true of mankind at large, how much more of those that God has called today to use in positions of service in the world tomorrow? And what if the challenges and the training we're experiencing today are specific to our roles in the world tomorrow? I believe they are. And we don't know exactly what those roles may be, but God does. And He's specific in His training of us because He's going to make sure that we're ready for that position of service that He has in mind. Only He truly knows what it is, but I think this principle of specificity is at work on a spiritual level. That nothing He allows us to face goes to waste. Now, specificity applies not only to the type of activity that someone does while they're training, but also to the conditions and the intensity of the activity as well. You have to be specific about your training for the specific conditions that you're going to experience in the future when you participate in the big event. I'll give you a personal example. I know I've shared, at least mentioned this story in the past about participating in a sprint triathlon, one of the shortest versions of a triathlon you could do, so don't get impressed or anything, especially when you hear this story. I trained for it. I did a lot of swimming. I did a lot of biking. Okay, maybe not a lot of. I did some biking, not as much as I should. And I did plenty of running because at the time I was teaching and doing an after-school running program where we ran 4 days a week. I had dozens of middle schoolers waiting for me to run with them around Cleveland, so I couldn't get out of that one. But I did a lot of swimming and a lot of biking as well. But I didn't quite apply the principle of specificity in terms of the conditions that the event would take place in. See, I did all of my swimming, all of my training in a lap lane at the YMCA. The event was at Portage Lakes in Ohio. The day of the event, there was no little barrier between my lane and the lanes of the other 15 or so men that ran into the lake at the same time. And there was no lifeguard there saying, "Hey, stop pushing." And if you've ever tried to swim in a lake, it's quite different from swimming in the calm, clear pool water at your local rec center. So I'll just say, I was familiar with the end of the swim with a couple of things. I was very familiar with the taste of the lake water. I was very familiar with how the bottom of the lake felt because I thought I was going around the course and instead I had been swimming along the shore and I didn't realize it until I kept touching the bottom because my goggles were all fogged up and things just weren't working right in this different environment. I was also very familiar with the life-saving volunteers in the kayaks who kept coming by me and saying, "Are you sure you're going to be okay?" Yes, I am. I'll make it, I promise, in between gasps. When it came to the biking, I had done some biking, probably not as much as I should have, but I had done some. But most of the time when I did my biking, it was near our home, which is a pretty flat, level area, or was at the time. And on occasion, I thought I was applying the principle of specificity, and I would just swim at the Y, and then I'd hop off. I'd go into the fitness center, and I would ride the exercise bike. Very different terrain from the Portage Lakes area, which is kind of like similar roads as to where we live now. Hills. So although I had prepared for the race, I thought I was being specific in my training, I wasn't prepared for riding that bike and shifting between the different gears on all these hills. So two different times, I was the guy everybody else was passing because I was trying to get the chain back on my bike because it popped off while biking on these hills. But I finally got to the running part. Okay, I know how to do this. I've done plenty of this specific training. But the thing is, I didn't ever train on how to run while your gut is filled with lake water. So after about a mile in, I got rid of that lake water, and then the rest of the run was fine. I also, when it came to this entire race, I had never done any of this training specifically the morning after fasting. When I signed up for this event, I didn't pay any attention to the fact that it was the day after atonement. So I did my first triathlon after fasting. So many of these areas you can see where, although the training itself I thought was specific to the goal, I didn't really have a realistic perspective on what the real course would be like. Spiritually speaking, you know who does? You know who understands exactly what role he's going to use you for in the future? Exactly what character traits you need to be strong in? Exactly what experiences you need to have to be compassionate with the people you're going to be working with? God the Father. And we may often wonder, why are you allowing me to go through this? Whatever this is for you. Perhaps the principle of specificity can help alleviate some of that inner turmoil that we can wrestle with during those times. God allows us to go through challenges, pressures, conflicts, and trials, not always because of what we've done, but because of what He plans for us to do. He's focused on the goal that He alone is aware of at this time, of how He's going to use us in the future in His kingdom. But we can rest assured that our training will not go to waste. Our struggle, our pain, our blood, sweat, and tears are never wasted. They're all working to train us for the specific role that God has in mind for us in the future. A second principle of training that I think we can easily see at work in our lives, especially in terms of analyzing our lives and the trials we go through, is the principle of overload. Overload is basically the fact that the intensity of exercise must be high enough above our normal comfort zone to force our bodies to adapt and to grow stronger. So, in other words, you have to be pushed outside of what's your normal level of comfort when doing an activity so that your body is forced to adjust and grow stronger. Now, the saying, no pain, no gain, is absolutely true scientifically. If we don't break down the muscle fibers, do a little more than is comfortable for our bodies, we won't actually get any stronger and be able to do more in the future. This principle of overload has to be put to work in order for us to make the gains that we need to make it to our bigger goal. For example, if you can easily do a few sets of 10 push-ups, overload would mean instead of doing sets of 10 push-ups, you do sets of maybe 12 or 13 or 14, a little more than you're comfortable with. Okay, let's be more realistic. If you can easily do 2 push-ups, then overload would be doing 3. Just kidding. I'm sure more of you can do more than 2 push-ups than I can. If you can run 1 mile comfortably, the principle of overload would be increasing either the distance of how far you're running or the pace that you're running at, to push your body and help it adapt over time and get stronger. The idea behind overload is that when you demand a little bit more from your body than it is normally used to doing, it will adapt and get stronger. And overload is really the sweet spot where growth occurs. Because during overload, although it doesn't feel pleasant, when those muscle fibers are broken down, they grow back stronger. Actually, when you overload your muscles, you're breaking them down so that the fibers can grow back and the body can add a little more energy to helping those grow back stronger for the next time. And over time, when the muscles are overloaded repeatedly, or your heart, your lungs are overloaded, they adapt. The body reaches a new level of comfort. Now maybe running that 1.5 miles feels pretty easy instead of just the mile. Or doing those 3 push-ups feels pretty easy instead of just the 2. This is the principle of overload at work physically. Does God use this principle in our spiritual development? Well, have you ever felt slightly uncomfortable in your spiritual training? Slightly uncomfortable with what He's allowing you to endure? Do you ever feel like you're being stretched to the limit or past it? Like the challenges and trials thrown your way are more than you can handle? Well, Paul did. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Notice verse 8. We read this a few weeks back, but with a different focus. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 8. I don't need a show of hands to get an answer to those questions. You know, have you ever felt overloaded spiritually, overloaded by trials or challenges in your life? I think we would all share the same answer to that question. But it's one that even the Apostle Paul shared the same experience as we do. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 8 says, "For we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life." Now, what do some of those phrases sound like? Burdened beyond measure and above strength. That sounds like overload. Paul says, we were given a little bit more than we could handle, or a little more than we thought we could handle, definitely a little more than we could handle comfortably. And yet, verse 9, yes, we have the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. And by being burdened beyond measure and above strength, it caused this deeper reliance on God. It caused them to look to Him, to give them the encouragement, the spiritual help they needed to press on, to adapt to the situation and get stronger as a result. Now, there are times when we have more placed on us than we feel like we can bear. Perhaps more than we can bear alone. Yet God gives us the strength to endure in those moments. He puts the principle of overload to work in our lives and tests us beyond measure, sometimes above strength, beyond what we're comfortable with, but not beyond what we're capable of achieving. The thing about overload is that it has to be done very carefully and intentionally. You can't just hear about the principle of overload and say, okay, more than you're comfortable with is good, then I'm going to double the weight on this rack. I can bench 50 pounds, I'm going to double it to 100. Well, overload has to be done carefully, wisely, in order not to cause injury or complete discouragement. It has to be outside of the comfort zone, but within reasonable achievement, even though it might appear to be outside of our possibilities initially. We're all capable of doing much more than we think we can do when we're pushed in the right way, when we're overloaded at the right level. And God has the perfect understanding of what that looks like for each of us. We turn back a few pages to 1 Corinthians 10. We'll read verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. It's a very familiar verse, one I think that we all appreciate, but one that we might read and subconsciously add an extra word to. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. Says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." That's an incredibly comforting and encouraging verse. But I don't know about you, but I know for myself, at times I can think of this passage or read this passage and in my mind, in my heart, add the word comfortably. I can read it and think to myself, God is faithful and He won't allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it comfortably. But that's not what He tells us. He says, I'll make sure that you're able to bear whatever I allow you to go through. But He doesn't promise that that's going to be comfortable. Overload usually is not comfortable. By definition, it's not comfortable. It's outside of our comfort zone. But God knows where those limits are. He knows the perfect balance of how far to push us. He knows when to step in and intervene and realize, okay, this is too much. He knows when to step in and help us lift that symbolic bar of weight up off our chests when it is too much for us. But He also knows when to just lean in and say, almost there. You've got this. Keep pushing. I'm going to read this verse from the Message. I don't often quote from the Message because it's not really a translation. It's a poetic paraphrase. But once in a while, I like the way it puts things, and that's the case here. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, the Message says, "No test or temptation that comes your way is beyond the course of what others have had to face. All you need to remember is that God will never let you down. He'll never let you be pushed past your limit. He'll always be there to help you come through it. Now, He knows perfectly what those limits are better than we do. But again, keep in mind that the purpose of this principle of training, overload, is not designed to punish the athlete. It's not designed to humiliate the person for their lack of strength. It's carefully designed to help the individual achieve what he once thought he could not. To overload the person just enough so that they'll actually get stronger and be moving toward the goal. To slowly and manageably increase his ability to perform at a higher level in whatever the specific targeted area is. So God's working with us in that way. Yes, it feels like too much at times. But we can follow the words of Jesus Christ and let not our hearts be troubled by understanding, putting into perspective what we go through and remembering He's preparing a place for us and He's preparing us for that place. He's working with us to make sure we're ready for the role that He has in mind for us in the future. And at times that means we're tested outside our comfort zone, we're pushed and stretched and challenged, but it's because He has us on a spiritual training plan toward a specific goal known to Him only. He won't demand the end goal of us all at once, but He will from time to time overload us in a measured way for our own spiritual good, because He's helping us move toward that goal He has in mind. Again, hopefully this principle of training can help us view the challenges that we face in just a slightly different light. Not to be discouraged by the fact that we are overloaded at times, but to recognize it, that it's under the management of a God who knows our abilities and our limits, and He knows the exact goal, the specific goal He has in mind. Let's move on to the third principle, which is progression. Now, these are just a few. There are other principles of training that I think also have spiritual correlations. For example, recovery. That's an important one. You don't just keep going and going and going and never give yourself a period of recovery. I think God follows that principle as well. As we see, there are times in our lives where we have a calm place. But progression, let's focus on this one. Basically, this is continuing the overloading process, but in small, manageable steps. As a person's level of fitness improves, they have to make adjustments to their training if that growth is going to continue. Otherwise, overload will no longer be overload. You get stronger, it feels comfortable now, right? So the concept or the principle of progression, it goes beyond just overloading once or twice to make you a little bit stronger and make you feel comfortable again. It continues that process of small, manageable pieces of overload so that you keep moving toward the total training goal. The art of progressive overload in training is a pretty tricky business. It's easy, physically, to move that progression along too quickly or too slowly. Many times people start out with enthusiasm when they decide, you know what, I'm going to get in better shape. Those January 1st workout warriors. You know what, if 30 minutes of activity is good each day, I'm going to do 3 hours and I'm going to do it 6 days a week and I'm just going to go at it hard. And how long does that last? About a day and a half, because that delayed onset muscle soreness kicks in and you can't move and you think, what was I thinking that I could even do this? They end up throwing in the towel and quitting completely with their training because they didn't have a balanced approach to that progression. When it's not carefully planned and regulated, it's easy to overdo it, to either lose motivation or injure yourself and just determine, you know what, this isn't worth it. Progressive overload must occur in small, manageable steps if it's to be sustainable and healthy. Well, does God use this principle? How many of you have had just one trial or test in your life? How many of God's chosen people were tested once and then given eternal life? Or tested once early on in your conversion and you said, "Wow, that's the hardest thing I ever had to deal with. After that, life got easy." Unlikely. Simply doesn't happen that way. God uses this principle of progression, this incremental growth over time, working with us gently, carefully, but stretching us, strengthening us, preparing us for the role of service He has in mind in the future. You know, think back on your own life. What trials have you endured that you would have once thought would be impossible to survive? But here you are. And that's because of progression. Because God has perfect understanding of the rate of progression that we can handle. As I know I've said before, if God allowed us to see a snapshot from the beginning of everything we'd have to face in our Christian walk, who would sign up for it? But when you stand in the present and you look back on what God allowed you to experience and what He got you through, there's encouragement in that. And looking back and saying, "These things that I never would have thought I could handle, You gave me the strength little by little to get through that, and as a result, I can see how You made me stronger spiritually. I never would have thought that I could make it through that. I didn't think I was capable of that, but here I am." You might have specific examples that come to mind in your own life. I certainly do. But my point with this principle of training is not to discourage us and say, "Well, you know, you think that last trial was hard? You better brace yourself because progression." That's not my point at all. Instead, what I'm saying is, look at what God's done for you already. Look back on how He's helped you through things that you thought were impossible. And look at the character and resilience that He built in you as a result, and the trust that He's established between the two of you in the process. And know, brethren, that these things are not without purpose. It's been part of His training plan for each of us. He knows what He's doing. And He knows when that progression has reached its goal. We need not live in fear of what the next trial might be, because it very well may be true that God's already got us where He wants us in this certain area. And He might start working on something else. But Psalm 84, I think, describes this principle of progression at work. Psalm 84. We'll begin in verse 1. I can find it. Psalm 84, beginning in verse 1. "To the chief musician on an instrument of gas, a psalm of the sons of Korah. How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts! My soul longs, yes, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God." Now, the wording's a little different here, but this is the psalm that inspires the lyrics of our hymn, "How lovely are your dwellings." Dwellings, mansions. "My soul longs, yes, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God." The psalmists here are describing this urgency within them to be in God's house, to be a part of His family forever. Verse 3, "Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God." You know, even these birds, they find rest in these little coves of your house. Of the physical temple is the imagery here. Where's my spot? It's where I want to be. "Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will still be praising you." Still be praising you. Why wouldn't they be? Verse 5, "Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage." His heart is set on moving forward to the goal that God has in mind. "As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a spring. The rain also covers it with pools. And it's this next phrase that I think is just descriptive of progression. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion. If we step back to verse 6 here, this description that God's people, those who are blessed, are on this path, this pilgrimage. They're journeying toward the goal. The end of that goal is each one appears before God in Zion, spiritual Mount Zion. They appear before God in His kingdom. But along the way, we have these descriptors that they go from strength to strength. And along the way, they pass through the valley of Baca. That word Baca in the Hebrew means weeping. A footnote in my Bible, Scofield Study Bible, says Baca, literally weeping. Not a literal valley, but any place of tears. Symbolically describing the struggles of this life that we go through on our journey toward fulfilling our goal of dwelling in God's house. We all pass through those valleys, the valleys of weeping. There's no way around it. But when our heart is set on pilgrimage, set on journeying toward the spiritual destination and goal God has in mind for us, we go from strength to strength. We have this progression, this strength built in our character that God establishes in us on our journey toward dwelling in His house. Our strength to do the impossible will be found in Him. And we'll go from strength to strength. We'll keep getting stronger spiritually. We'll continue in this progression, building the character He wants us to have so that we can serve in the ways He has in mind. And because of where we're heading and because of what we're being trained for, we can look back on those valleys of weeping and, as it says here, make them a spring. They pass through the valley of Baca, the valley of weeping. They make it a spring. And we can look back on the times in our lives when, yes, we shed some tears because of the challenges we had to endure. But we can look back on how God got us through it and use it as a refreshing spring to drink in the lessons that we gain from those experiences, those challenging times, and to realize it was God's way of moving us on this path of progression from strength to strength so that we could eventually appear before Him in Zion. God's bringing us along on this path, and He has the perfect wisdom to know what we can handle with His help, when we can handle it, and where we've already been prepared for the purpose He has in mind. He's the one who knows where the progression leads and where it's already reached its goal. He's the one who knows what that specific office or dwelling or purpose in His family is going to be for each of us. So again, we don't have to live in fear of the next trial of life because of this principle of progression. Instead, we can reflect on the training we've already experienced and the tears shed in the process and take encouragement from the fact that God was moving us along toward the goal He has in mind for us. That none of that suffering was wasted. But can we keep learning from yesterday's trials by looking back on them and using them as these, springs? Can we look back on those trials of the past so that perhaps we don't need another one right away? Can we think about the tears shed and the sweat dripped and the total reliance upon God that we experienced in those moments and ask God, help me to keep gaining from that training? Allow this to be a period of recovery for me where I'm gaining from that previous training and I don't have to go through something else big right now. I think that's a fair request, especially when we're doing our part to try to gain everything we can from the trials of the past. We can ask Him to keep helping us make progress in putting the lessons learned in the past to work in the present. We can look back and thank Him for bringing us as far as He has, for helping us go from strength to strength. We'll continue here in verse 8. It says, O Lord God of hosts, hear my prayer. Give ear, O God of Jacob. Selah. O God, behold our shield, and look upon the face of your anointed. For a day in your courts is better than a thousand. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those who walk uprightly. O Lord of hosts, blessed is the man who trusts in you. Remember those many mansions in our Father's house that Christ referred to? Those many dwellings or offices or positions of service? The psalmists basically say here, I don't care which one of them is mine. I just want to be there. But will we be doorkeepers in the house of God, brethren? Maybe you've heard someone in the church in the past say, I don't care if I have to be a sweeper of the streets of gold. Just want to be there. But realistically, although that mindset is honorable, we just want to be a part of God's kingdom. He's not called us to be doorkeepers and street sweepers, because that's a far cry from what he prophesies about the saints being kings and priests. Whatever role God has in mind for each of us, he will help us be ready for it. And he will use the experiences and trials of this life at work with these basic principles of training to do so. The question is, will we see the training as worth it? Will we view the sufferings, the challenges, the trials of this life not as an injustice or a punishment in some way, but as part of God's training plan to prepare us for the future roles he has in store? He knows what they are, even if they might be currently a mystery to us. And he uses these principles of specificity, overload, and progression to help prepare us for them. As 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 and 17 state, therefore, we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So, brethren, never stop training. And never stop believing that your training is for a purpose.